I also spent much time writing other books about the adventures I had encountered along the way. When I began to arrange the data from these transcripts, I realized there were still some unanswered questions. These would have to be answered before the book would be complete. I had visited Beth, but we had not worked on this material for 3 years. Even though I had not spoken to Tuin in all the time, I did not think it would be a problem to call him up again. In a sense, the people in these reincarnation experiments never die. They can be resurrected as many times as necessary. They are in this sense eternal, immortal. They are always living their lives in their respective time periods, and can be easier contacted. This is an amazing part of this phenomenon for which I have no answer. I only know that it is possible, because I have accomplished it many, many times. The entities appear to live forever in the subconscious minds of the subjects. I phoned Beth and told her that I needed to contact Duin again. She had not consciously thought about him during the ensuing years, but was willing to reopen the experiment so I could tie up the few loose ends. On the day of the appointment, I used her keyword. 3 years passed, 199, 200. The legend of Star Crush, it worked perfectly, as though there had been no interruption in our sessions. She entered immediately into a deep somnambulistic trance, and we began. I knew that the information I needed would not be found during Tuin's lifetime because of his narrow-focused physical viewpoint. I would have to speak to his spirit after his physical death in the avalanche. I counted her back to that time, and she immediately began to describe a scene of ethereal beauty which she was watching on the spirit plane. B. Everything exists on multiple planes, and I'm looking at the Earth and at all the various planes it exists on. The picture is very beautiful, but it's also very complicated. I can see that not only is there the physical Earth that I was familiar with when I was hunting down there, but there are also other Earths that are occupying the same space, but on a different level of energy. D. That sounds complicated. B. It's very beautiful. They're all linked together and related to each other. But as you go from one type of energy to another, as well as from one level of energy to another, there are subtle changes that differentiate the different types of Earth from each other, and the different levels of Earth from each other. D. Do these different levels and different parts look alike? B. They look similar, but there are subtle changes. As an example, I will use an apple tree. In the springtime, when it's blooming on the regular physical Earth that one sees when one is on the physical plane, you see the grayish brown bark, and the white blossoms with a touch of pink to it. It looks like a regular apple tree. But on the next level up, when the same apple tree is blooming in the springtime, the blossoms will be more of a gold color instead, and the bark will be darker. It will still be the same concept, an apple tree, but you're on a different energy level. As you go up through the different energy levels, you keep seeing subtle changes like that. There's one energy level where apple trees have dark brown bark, silver blossoms, and blue leaves. But not just any shade of blue, it's a particular shade. I'm trying to think of a way to describe it for you. You know how it is at the Magic of the Old Ones, 201, sunset, when the sun has set all the way and it's twilight, and you still have some gold at the horizon. But straight above you is this pure shade of blue. That's the shade of blue the leaves on the apple trees are on one of these energy levels. The leaves have gradually changed from green to blue-green to turquoise to this blue color, as you go up through the different energy levels. D. It is the same form. It just changing in color. B. Right. The landscapes stay similar, but they alter a little from one level to the next. If you go up through levels in order, you can see the landscape shift slightly, but you can see where it's related. But if you would start at one level and skip several levels in between, it will look different because you haven't seen the shifting process. It would be different colors, different shapes, different locations. But it all shifts very subtly from one level to the next. For example, you're standing in a field on Earth on a physical plane. There's a river over here to your left, and a mountain to your right. You shift up to the next plane, and the mountain is sloped just a little differently. It might have slightly more gradual slopes or slightly steeper slopes, but it will be shaped just a little differently. It's still at the same location, so you can tell it's the same mountain. And the river might be wider, for example, but it's still the same river. It's just a little different. And if you go up to the next plane, the river might still be the same size, but it might be a little bit closer to the mountain. And so it's just subtle changes like that. If you go up through the levels one at a time, you can see these gradual shifts, but you can see where they're related to everything on the level below it. If you were to skip from the earth level and go up 5 or 6 levels, and hit that without looking at any of the levels in between, you might find a level where the grass is bluer in color, the mountain is quite a bit different in shape, and the river has moved to where it's right next to the base of the mountain. And it has now turned into a small rushing mountain stream. You might think you were at a different location, when you're actually still standing at the same place. 202. The Legend of Stark Rush, D. That does sound complicated, but I think I can understand that. B. As you go up through the higher energy levels, the relationships of the colors to each other change. Somehow the light changes when you go up, so that the colors appear differently to you. The light apparently affects the colors of everything. It sounded like a very beautiful scene and it was an interesting concept, but it was time to get down to the business for which I had contacted you in spirit in this otherworldly state. D. I wanted to ask some questions about things in Tuink life, that he couldn't understand in his time. I thought you might have the answers, because you have much more knowledge now. You've already given me explanations about other things he saw and experienced that he couldn't understand. He talked about the wise man's strange pot which he called the cauldron. I was curious about that. It was a strange pot that he said changed colors, and it had a handle which turned. All he knew was that the wise man used it for something. He had a hard time explaining it. Do you know what hell mean? B. Yes. This pot that he referred to is a very ancient relic. For you see, Tuin's people were descended from galactic travelers who came there long ago and colonized that part of Earth. And since they weren't planning on flying their ship again, they cannibalized it. They used everything that they could convert for everyday purposes. But as the centuries passed, the things wore out, became broken, lost or taken away as groups moved away. By the time of Tuin's group, one of the artifacts they still had was this pot that the wise man used, and it was from the galactic travship. It was not originally designed as a pot, per se. It started out as a part of a device that helped to control the flow of energy that ran the ship. By Tuin's time, they no longer had the source of energy that was available for the ship. All they had was fire and running water. The keepers of these artifacts were traditionally the wise men of the tribe, or the wise women, whatever the case would be. And they passed this artifact down from generation to generation. They also passed down instructions, the magic of the old ones, 203, for its care and its use, what it was for and what it was supposed to do. But since they knew this was a precious thing and the information was precious, they were very careful about who they told about this. The original source of energy to activate what was left of this device was no longer available, so they had learned to partially activate it through the application of heat. They would set it over a fire to start the activation, because this device would take the heat of the fire and convert it into the energy it needed. It could not operate the way it was supposed to, because it did not have enough energy. It could partially work. And by this time so much knowledge had been lost, that although it was only working partially, the pot was considered to be very impressive and very special. D. But on the ship it was part of the controls that ran the ship. B. No, no, no. It was part of channeling the energy system. The controls were something else totally. It was part of a device that helped shape the energy. They had a different concept of energy. On this Earth in your time period, energy is pictured as something that flows through something, like electricity through a wire, or water through a dam to produce energy. These galactic travelers had a different way of dealing with energy. Instead of energy just flowing where it wanted to, energy was shaped. It's hard to explain. I'm not sure I understand, but they had devices that would shape the energy. And depending on what form the energy would take, it would do particular things, or it would react in particular ways. so according to what they needed to have done on the ship, the device would shape the energy. The controls were a separate device that would let this device know what shape it needed to mold the energy into. So it was not always the same shape. It was shaped for what it was needed be, exactly. There were an infinite number of shapes it could be. But it took a particular amount of energy to do it the way it was supposed to be done. By Tuin's time, part of this artifact, the energy shaper, was missing. Plus they didn't have a steady source of energy for it, so it really couldn't operate properly. But 204. The Legend of Star Crush, D, B, D, B, D, B, D, B, D, B. The things that it did and the color changes that it went through, were part of it trying to shape what energy it received. Hist thought there might have been more than one pot because he saw it as different colors. It was the same artifact changing colors as it tried to shape the energy it was receiving. But it was not receiving enough to complete the process. He said it had a strange type of handle or something on it. Yes. The pot, this device, was not all there, part of it was missing. And this handle was a part that used to connect with the missing part. It was kind of an inch between part to connect the piece they had into a larger device that could have come closer to doing what it was supposed to do. But as it was, they had only part of it, and so they never could even if they knew how make it do what it was supposed to do, because they didn't have the entire device. He said the handle could be moved around. That was part of shaping the energy. The part they had could be used to do some things, but they couldn't realize its full potential. What did the wise man use it for? The wise man used it for applying energy. If someone was sick or injured, the pot could direct enough energy to aid with the healing process. Also, if the wise man applied some of this energy to himself while in a meditative state, it would cause him to have visions. Tuan say sometimes if the farms found rocks or things in the field, they would bring them to the wise man. I don't know if use the pot for this or not. If they found a rock or something in the field that seemed to have a high metal content, they would bring it to the wise man. He would apply fire and sunlight or what have you to the pot to give it as much energy as he could. And it would be enough so that whenever he inserted this rock it could purify it into a purer metal content, and perhaps shape it in a particular shape that was needed. Similar to what the complete device would do, the magic of the old ones, 205, D, B, D, B, D, B, D, B, to energy, the partial device could do to material things. It could either purify them some or change the shape or what have you. But it would only work with certain things. It wouldn't work with wood, for example, but it would work with certain types of rocks, certain types of metals. It sounds like he couldn't he do very much at a time. No, it was a specialized thing. Another useful thing that the pot did, was that it was good for making medicines. They knew that when you chewed on the leaves of a particular plant that the juice would help you in a medicinal way. If you placed these leaves in the pot and applied energy to it, it would extract this liquid from the leaves. You'd have concentrated medicine, rather than having to chew a lot of leaves to get the medicine value. It was in the wise man's house, and it seemed like no one else knew how to use it. This was very specialized knowledge, because some of the details had been lost. They had been passing it down from person to person across many centuries, so it was difficult to keep track of everything. Can you see what eventually happened to that artifact? Yes. More centuries pass, and eventually enough knowledge is lost so they're not able to use it anymore, and for 2 or 3 centuries it's used as a status symbol. Whoever the pot is passed down to is designated as the spiritual leader of the tribe. And finally at one point in time there was one particular spiritual leader who was very charismatic. When he died, as a gesture of respect they found a cave that would make a good tomb. They placed him in there, and put the pot and some other things with him. Then they put a boulder and some rubble in front of it, and blocked the cave to protect this particular wise man's body and the artifacts. It seems it would be very unlikely that it would be found then. It is somewhat unlikely unless there happens to be an earthquake or something that would knock loose the boulders and the plants and such that have grown over the cave opening. 206. The legend of Stark Rush would have to tear or knock them away to expose this again. Or if, with modern machinery, one were to apply sensing devices such as radar, sonar or what have you, to the mountain range, one could find the hidden caves and such. But, as you say, it is probably unlikely that it will come to light any time soon. It has been too long and it was a small cave to begin with. D. I was curious about a few other things that were mentioned in the legends. Tuin talked about the sun spear that the old ones used. I think he said they used it to kill animals. B. It was a device that would shoot out a ray of energy. It appeared like intense light, but it had other energies in it as well. You would aim this device like one would a firearm, and press the activating button. The light would shoot out and hit whatever animal or what have you wanted to hit, and it would kill them on the spot. It appeared as a straight beam of light, or a spear of light. It's one of those devices that survived down through those years and some of the knowledge was lost. They started calling it a sun spear. After a while the device wore out so it did not work anymore, and then it became lost. D. I thought it sounded like a laser beam or something similar. B. There was visible light in the ray of energy, but there were other energies in there as well. It had a particular balance of energies. So that if you shot it at an animal, it would kill it instantly without causing the animal pain, and without doing excess damage to the body. It was assumed that you wanted to use the animal to eat, and so you didn't want to damage the body, because that would be damaging what you could eat. D. He also talked about a box that cooked food. It was supposed to have been very miraculous. B. Yes. This box that cooked food was actually quite simple, but the technology involved was far beyond anything Tuin's people had at the time. This box ran by solar energy. You would set it out in the sun, and the energy it absorbed from the sun would be converted to energy to cook with. It was similar to microwave, but not exactly, because the people who designed this box, the magic of the old ones, 207, D, B, D, B, D, B, had a different concept of energy, that I mentioned earlier. It was different concepts with different principles involved. But most basically, the equivalent would be a solar-powered microwave oven. It was powered by the sun. Right, just set it out in the sun, and it would cook things. It ran off the type of energy they were familiar with. It wouldn't be the same thing if we put a box out in the sun, right? Because the people who invented and built the box had a different concept of energy use. He talked about a round ball that could be held in the hand, and he also mentioned a rock that could talk back. I don't know if these are the same things or not, or if they were related to each other. They're two different things. The round ball that could be held in the hand was a nearly perfect sphere. The material it was made out of was a special kind of crystal that does not exist on this earth. Now as humankind expands into space exploration, sooner or later they will run across this material. This particular material is actually a crystal, although it appears metallic. And when you held this crystal sphere in your hand, the energies that flow through the earth, the magnetic and gravity energies, plus the energies from your body would cause the crystal to react. As a result, it could do many wonderful things. One could channel energy through it and use it for all kinds of things. For example, one very common side effect was that whenever someone used the crystal, things would start levitating around them, or it would accidentally teleport things. Something would pop out of existence here and then pop back into existence over there. It would be a side effect of the energies being channeled through this sphere. Now the rock that could talk back to you was actually not a rock, although that was how Tuin perceived it. Through the retelling of the tales and legends across the centuries, it had been corrupted. The rock that could talk back to you was actually or basically a metallic device, and it had its own self-contained energy system. It could be used for transmitting 208, the legend of Stark Rush, and receiving messages, rather like radio, but there was a different level of energy involved. They would use it to communicate with people in the ships in orbit around the Earth. D. Do you mean the others that were there whenever they first landed? B. Yes. They were in communication with the ones that were still orbiting, to let them know whether or not they could live on this planet. And this device had other uses as well, because they could use it for analyzing types of energies. For example, it could analyze the type of light the plants were absorbing, the type of energies being used by the ecosystem on the Earth. It sent the information back up to the ship in orbit, where they could analyze it, and determine whether or not they could live here. So it was a radio-type device. I think I only have one more question. Do you remember the drawing Tuin made of a blanket design? I think you said on time that this was not a drawing of the main ship, but it was like a shuttle or something, a smaller ship. The way the picture was drawn, there was a star-shaped object above the doorway. I thought it looked like a six-point star, only it was standing on two legs with two legs up in the air and two out to the side. That's the way Tuin drew it anyway. Can you tell me if that star had any real significance, or was that something they made up for the blanket? The star had significance because of where it was positioned. It represented an actual object on the shuttle ship. In that area above the door? When you first entered the door, the ceiling was right above your head, but above the ceiling was a lot of instrumentation and such. And the central part of this instrumentation was this huge and very complex crystal. The star design that they drew in that position was their simplified representation of this crystal. This crystal was very complicated with many fingers and branches and such. It was similar to a gigantic and complicated piece of quartz, for example, with all the fingers of crystals sticking out all over. But every bit of this crystal was used. Each finger of crystal, each size, each angle and each shape did particular things. The magic of the old ones. 209. To the type of energy they used. It was used as a central channeling of the energy, to apply it particularly to the automated devices, so they would basically run by themselves. It ran the shuttle, plus it kept the shuttle systems coordinated with the ship systems. When I first saw it, I thought it looked like a six-pointed Star of David, except that it was not shaped the same way. There is a similarity, particularly when the Star of David is drawn so that the various branches seem to weave in and out with each other, as for the Seal of Solomon. That is another representation of this crystal I have mentioned. Do you mean that is where the Seal of Solomon and the Star of David came from? Yes. I thought it looked similar. But if this was a craft that landed in North America and was related to Tuin's tribe, how did knowledge of it get to Asia? It probably could be wrong on the history of where the Seal of Solomon came from. You are correct as far as you have taken it, because this group landed in North America and established their colony there. But this was not the only group of space travelers to land on your planet. Since several of the other peoples were not very advanced yet, whenever any of these groups landed their ships in other parts of the planet, the people would take it as a miraculous event. There have been many stories of this type of visit that were put into legends and passed down, particularly in the Middle East. The people who were living there at the time were very superstitious and took notice of anything out of the ordinary. Since they had reading and writing, they recorded it and the event would be preserved in that way. As a result, in several holy writings around the earth you have these descriptions of miraculous visits and voyages. For example, in the ancient kingdom of Mesopotamia we have the Epic of Gilgamesh, which gives us the story of Gilgamesh and his friend, Enkidu. The encyclopedia lists this as one of the very earliest epics and was written on Babylonian clay tablets in cuneiform. It also refers, 210, the legend of Star Crush, to Utnapishtim, an equivalent to Noah. The epic describes a voyage that Gilgamesh takes, to where the sea that he looks at becomes a pond and then a mud puddle and then like a porridge bowl. What he is describing is that he was able to take a trip in one of these ships. There are other descriptions that have been preserved in what you would call the Bible. There are several descriptions of the landing of this type of ship and the people who came out of it. For example, the man named John who wrote Revelation saw a ship land, and they broadcasted greetings and such. The people who were listening to this were very frightened of what was happening. In another place, Ezekiel described seeing the ship land in the desert. Ezekiel had been out in the desert for a while, and as part of his meditation he indulged in hallucinogenic substances, so he was accustomed to strange things happening. Thus he was not as afraid as other chroniclers had been, and so he could be a bit more objective about what he was writing. But it was still very wondrous to him, because he did not have enough knowledge of technology to give as accurate a description as he would have liked. D. This is getting a little confusing to me. I thought the only group of people to land on Earth were this small group that landed in Tuin's area. Dormin, there was this group that stayed there, and then other people that might have landed somewhere else. B. You're thinking too narrowly. You're not thinking of a broad enough picture. A small group landed and lived there in Tuin's area, because they had no choice. But they weren't the only people coming to Earth. There's a galactic civilization, and since Earth was not at a very high technological level, they were not very careful about where they landed in the past. They knew the natives of Earth could not harm them, because they did not have the weapons. So this ship that landed with Tuin's ancestors was not the only ship that ever visited the Earth. When that group landed, they basically settled down where they were and just lived their lives in that isolated area. The other people from the same galactic civilization are as complex as we are. Different people, the magic of the old ones, 211, have different motivations. And others would come in their ships, and they didn't care if the people saw them or not. They wanted to land and maybe do some exploitation, or some exploration. Other groups have come at different times in the history of the planet. This group which Tuin spoke of had designed their ships so they could take them apart and use them on the planet's surface, so they dismantled them and just stayed there. D. Then the other groups that came were either before or after. They were coming to different parts of the Earth. They all seemed to use this same type of crystallurgy. And this was where the designs for the Star of David and the Seal of Solomon came from. B. This crystal energy was one of the most common forms of energy in this galactic civilization. They used the crystals for focusing the energy. For example, in your civilization you use electricity. To get that electricity into your home, you have a wire carrying it into a breaker box where it is split up into many wires going to many different directions, coming out as light sockets for light and electrical outlets for plugging in various machines. This galactic civilization, instead of having a wire carrying electricity and a breaker box to split it up and send the electricity in its different various directions, used something that is similar to what they call coherent energy. Very pure, very solid forms of energy focused through crystals. Depending on how many different forms of energy was needed and where it was needed, this would affect the shape of the crystal. The crystal would focus the energy and then send it wherever it needed to go. This is similar to the description given in my book, Keepers of the Garden, of how crystals were used by other civilizations for different types of energy. Their shapes also affected their functions. B. They had crystals of all sizes. The larger, more complicated ones were for running ships and running buildings and such. And then they had smaller, portable, handheld ones, for doing other things. For example, if the ship landed somewhere in the desert, 212, the legend of Stark Rush, and the crew decided they needed water, they would take a handheld crystal outside. They would hold it in their hand and focus the energy from the sun either towards a rock or towards the ground. This would cause one of the underground streams of water to alter its course and come up to the surface to form a spring where they could have water. They could do things like this without going through a lot of physical labor. The concept is similar to the sphere that Tuin described. The round ball worked in similar principles, but different things happened because it was a perfectly round crystal rather than a faceted one. It had a different function, but it was still the idea of holding the crystal where it could absorb the various energies and focus them in certain ways. D. So the blanket design was really just a simplified version of the crystals that they saw, and this was passed down. B. Yes. When they tried to draw the crystal, they would draw it in the stylized design to symbolize the power that the crystals used. It became a sacred symbol. There are many ways that all this connects, even with your present time. There is the Seal of Solomon and the Star of David, plus any of the various specialized triangles and such, also. All of these go back to these ancient pictures of trying to describe what the crystals did. For example, the swastika was the attempt to picture the crystal as a central point and the energy branching out performing these different functions. The swastika is an even cross, the arms of which are bent at right angles.